Sir Jorah Mormont, she said, first and greatest of my knights, I have no bride gift to give you, but I swear to you one day you shall have from my hands a long sword like none the world has ever seen, dragon-forged and made of Valyrian steel. And I would ask for your oath as well.
Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast. Originally founded in 2010 as Two Champs and a Chum, we decided to rebrand when the game relaunched in the second edition. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and world we love, and of course to my co-hosts and you, the listeners. Please, if you enjoy the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice, comment on our Facebook threads, or even better, support us on Patreon. We love turning that kind of support back into the community. This is Season 10 of the White Book Podcast.
Sometimes you just run out of interesting quotes that you haven't done before.
I mean, after like 400 episodes?
Yeah.
Running out of quotes?
Yeah. At this point, I almost think we should have just started with Game of Thrones and like read one paragraph per episode. Just to see, you know, how far into the book would 400 paragraphs be? I think it would be a pretty hefty chunk.
I feel like it would be, yeah.
Oh, well, maybe next time. You know, we'll start that soon, and then when we get to 800 some odd, we'll see how far we are. You're laughing like I'm not going to drag you along and make you host that long.
I mean, considering this is a halfway mark.
Yeah.
There's also, you know, no more material to be released in the game, according to FFG, so
oh,
gonna have to wait until the next book comes out.
No more. Ouch. Well, maybe we'll get another book. No guarantee, but maybe.
I mean, at least a TV show of some sort will probably happen, so.
Maybe. We'll see what happens with the next one. That is a downer thought. So let's just move on from there. We did get some good news announced earlier today, actually. Which, by the way, I do also just want to throw out. I know it's early here in the episode, but I want to go ahead and throw some props out to Matt Holland, who I wish had been in his current role much earlier. I think it feels like he's really kind of come into his own, so to speak, as kind of the community support type of guy and kind of the point man to talk to and make announcements. It does mean that sometimes things are kind of semi-stealth announced, like buried in a reply chain on a Facebook thread. But it is nice to see the official interaction and communication and responsiveness compared to business as usual at FFG. So I think that's a real win. And I'm just kind of bummed that it's so late in the game, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, well, he's definitely been, like, very transparent about things, even with probably when he shouldn't be as much. But, yeah, he's been very open, and he usually responds very timely and provides us with the, you know, answers to a lot of questions that we don't get normally from FFG. So, yeah, he's doing a great job.
Yeah, I think so. And speaking of, we got some word today about the Things I Do for Love premium pack that's our next release for the game, which I think some sleuthy folks noticed that it was marked for a January release on FFG's upcoming page. Which, by the way, there's a slight aside there that's one of those things that kind of got stealth announced, buried in a reply chain somewhere else. I noticed the other day within, I don't know, earlier this week as of the time we're recording this, that Matt stealth announced in like the L5R group that the upcoming page at FFG was being completely reworked and relabeled. Or no, maybe it was Evan. It might have been Evan that I saw post it. Regardless, somebody did that. It was being reworked, and a lot of the BS statuses or stati, however that should be said, that we all kind of knew were made up and didn't matter and were not accurate, we're going to be going away. And they were basically just going to be marking things as, I think, in production or have the release month posted.
So no more at the printer, on the boat, shipping.
Right. None of those that were blatantly made up. Like, right, that is not still in production or whatever it was before, in development, I think, like a month before your release.
Yeah.
No. That is not on the boat the week before its release. Like, these are just made up. But anyway, so they ditched that. That's why they're gonna have the release months listed there once they have those kind of set in stone. And somebody noticed that the Things I Do for Love pack has a release month of January 2020. So possibly just over a month away, possibly as much as, you know, nearly 2 months away, depending on when in January. Exactly. I would say it's probably the traditional release date, but you never know. So this led to a little bit of an outcry on the boards there, or the Facebooks anyway, because, well, why would people be up in arms about that January date?
Couldn't think of anything. Will, could not think of anything.
Nothing.
Man. Nothing. Well, because, from my understanding of this pack, is it's for a special tournament. So, right?
A special tournament? I haven't heard anything about a special tournament.
Well, from what I understood was the pack was designed for like a legacy type event, or Classic Thrones maybe is what it was supposed to be called.
Oh, a whole different format. Yeah,
correct. Legacy but then I feel like, yeah, they didn't really, you know, follow through with that. And was, I really think they were planning on letting this be all legal in 2.0. So,
yeah, fully legal is at least how it appeared by the time that announcement article went up. Just like a normal product release, which means it would be legal for the World Championship. Assuming it came out in January, it would meet the cutoff in days to be legal for Worlds, probably. So there was a bit of an outcry, which it did amuse me, at least, to see Matt Holland kind of bemused by everyone's reaction. How often have you ever seen any game player, particularly card game players, demand not to be allowed to play new product?
This never happens. Aside from the people that know what's in that pack and understand what it's going to do to the game, probably made some good decisions there. And also, if you think about it, like the people that travel from, you know, other countries or even from, you know, other parts of the U.S. or Canada, I mean, that could be a pretty expensive little trip to come to a, you know, crap fest of some of the most bonkers cards ever printed. So,
well, some of them are.
Anno specifically said he wasn't even going to come if it was legal, or at least alluded to that.
Yeah, I think he said he had not decided for sure if he was attending, but that if the pack was legal, it would make the decision for him and make it for sure not to attend.
So it looks like they're at least making the correct decision.
And which, not letting in our case, legal. I think, all three of us are on the same page. That it should not be legal?
There's no way that pack has any place in 2.0. No way.
Yeah. Not without about 2 extra gold stapled onto every single card in the pack anyway.
Yeah, that was a great thing, was when I was able to see some of the pack and see, like, hey, this is like the same cost it was like in 1.0 or a CCG day. That's kind of weird. There's like, this is great. So
yeah, it really hurt seeing that little finger in the spoiler article and going, hey, wait a minute, he cost 5 gold in the CCG and was bonkers busted then. All they did was like strap 1 extra gold to him for second ed. Like, that does not seem like enough of a change.
There you go, guys. So, I will be interested in seeing like what the other format is and what the rules are going to be for that new format.
If there is, I'm going to bet there is not one they would have announced it when they announced the pack.
Well, in the chain of messages, Matt did say there's side events for this pack.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know if it's like different rules or if it's just like, hey, play whatever the heck you want.
I'm going to bet that's it. It's probably just a normal event, but that pack will be legal. That would be my guess. He did also say, though, now that you mentioned that the Worlds article should be up soon, detailing.
Yeah, I think it's mid December.
Yeah, so that will be good. I'm itching to see that.
Yeah, so I mean, pretty good announcement. And again, like you mentioned, like kudos to Matt for being on top of it. I think he even said it was off or something like that, or wasn't even working while he was replying to some of the Facebook messages, so...
Yeah, I think he's on holiday through, like, next week or something, he said. Yeah. But he was effectively still working all day, responding to folks on Facebook and then bugging people in the office for answers on stuff. So that, I think, just goes back to what I said earlier about props to him. I wish he had been in this position about 3 years ago. And I think it would have had a very large cumulative effect on where various games and communities and so on are.
Do you think the fact that he's able to facilitate between the company and the community at large and how easy he's able to do this calls into question what's been going on this entire time with FFG?
oh, all of the previous time when things have been very opaque. Yeah, it kind of does. I mean, I think we being the community at large already were questioning that at the time, but I think you're right that now that there is someone trying to facilitate that, you really wind up going, yeah, but couldn't this have just been done before?
Really? Just
not that I'm just advocating that everybody just work while they are on holiday, but
not
you
even
know.
That, but it's just the turnaround that he was able to accomplish that was so quick that if it even taken a week and he waited till next week when he was back, it's still faster than anything that would have happened prior to this. And it's frustrating.
Agreed. Oh, agreed. Yeah. Yeah, it's just, it's one of those what if sort of things, right? You just think like, man, what all would have been different about the state of the community, the game, organized play, you know, sales of the product, the future of the product, and so on, if there had been this kind of communication for the last 3 years since the game launched, you know? Since Second Ed launched, anyway.
No, I agree.
I mean, it's hard to predict, but I have to say that I think it would in general be much more favorable across the board. I think it would have had a very large kind of trickle-down effect.
Well, I think one of the biggest complaints that people had in the community was organized play. So, having someone that actually appears to care about his job and what he does, and I think he has a good mix of, you know, organizing and being able to communicate and communicate, you know, effectively and appropriately to people in the community. I think that helps out a lot in that position that he's in.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's great. I mean, and we saw a similar shift, what, a little over a year ago, year and a half ago, something like that, whenever Ryan Ritter moved into being able to prep prizes on the OP front. We really saw that quality and not just the quality of what was picked, but like the relevance of what was picked, right? So that they were actually useful cards and so on. We saw everything step up.
Everyone's using that summon the court from that organized play kit, right?
Or marching orders from, geez, was that the very first kit? Might have been.
Fortified Physician was the first kit.
Oh, okay. Well, Fortified
Humble Stone Knight.
What about the Altart and
Gamekeeper? Yeah.
Man.
Was it Neil when something saved? Something like that?
I don't even know.
Yeah, he does do that.
Yeah, I think he kneels stuff when it gets saved. I don't know. It's not good. But things have really stepped up since then. So I think the two would have been a pretty stellar combination to have had earlier. But, I mean,
yeah.
Sarah, I guess.
They had to have, like, just picked a card out of, like, a basket, right? Back in the day, on which promo they were going to do.
Probably, yeah.
I mean, it had to have been completely random, like a random number generator. Like, oh, here's the. Yeah, because some of it made, like, zero sense in life. And like you said, the card was never played. No one even knows what it does, but it's like, I mean, you gotta have like those cards that are, like you mentioned, relevant with great art to have like in these organized play kits and stuff like that to make people want to attend these events and try to chase after these promos and win them. But no one was wanting that summon a court.
No one. I mean, I think I've got it somewhere here just to try and be a completist, but that's never actually going to happen. Me being actually complete, that's never going to happen. Not with all the house specific stuff from like Gen Con lately here.
I'm torn because I like that idea, but if you're playing a house that you don't normally play, and like how are you gonna get these cards? Then they're so rare. So like the aftermarket is, you know, crazy expensive.
So Yeah, I'm torn. I mean, it definitely makes some excitement to kind of spread the prizes out that way, and give more people a reason to kind of keep fighting like all the way through, even if they're not going to win the top prize kind of thing. And I like that it fosters some house loyalty and things like that. It just kind of sucks for the completist collector that you are not getting those without paying a pretty penny.
And that's where I liked it. I think they started at Gen Con last year. I was ended up getting like top 8 at Gen Con or top 16, one of the two. But like I got to a point where they were giving me like full play sets of like some of the cards. So even though it wasn't like my faction of choice, I got to a point in the placement where like, oh, here's like all the reducers. Like, here you go, you get like a complete playset of all those. And then here's like all the lands that we had. Here's a complete playset of all those. So so that was nice where it was like rewarding you with those cards as you placed along. They did not
do that when I won Gen Con the prior year. I didn't even get a full playset of Catelyn Stark.
Oh,
didn't
no.
Even ask for them?
I went up and asked if I could have two more because I only got one. And they just told me no.
Hey, I just won Gen Con. Can I have like two of these promos? sorry, sir. We have 1,500 of these and they're for exclusively for like handouts. Sorry that you won the tournament.
Do you still need those, Tyler? I will happily give you two.
I was able to get some at some point, but the fact still remains.
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty killer.
And that was like another thing that I didn't like at Worlds was like when they had like those event tickets, and the only way you could get tickets was like in Melee. And then, like, I'm playing, like, in, you know, top 32, top 16 at Worlds, and I get, like, nothing, really. And then this other guy over here, you know, playing Melee for 4 rounds gets, like, all these tickets to do whatever he wants with it. So,
I'm going to say that sounds like a good plan to me. I think you just made the wrong choice and should have been playing Melee.
Probably. But yeah, I'm hoping so,
especially since it turns out you can build good Melee decks.
I mean, there's a secret to it. I don't want to give out all the secrets.
Well, yeah, you don't give all your tech away to the public on a podcast about, you know, BSing about the game or anything.
No, not at all. So
yeah,
but yeah, hopefully with it being, you know, the last Worlds that they do some better structure for the prize support and just like everyone gets whatever the heck they want for at least showing up. So,
yeah, hopefully
that'd be nice.
We will see. But I'm glad you've at least kind of turned back to Worlds here because I feel like we wandered far afield into the prize stuff when we were talking about the things I do for Love Pack and it not being legal for Worlds. And you brought up a very interesting point right before we started recording. About the things I do for Love Pack. And what was that?
Well, with it being released in January, and I believe there's still, I don't know, a dozen or so Prime tournaments, you know, in January and beginning part of February, are they going to be legal and be able to be played in Prime tournaments?
Ooh, that is a good question. That is a good question. Yeah.
And that's where I'm hoping that they have some type of verbiage with the pack release, like saying, hey, this isn't like supposed to be played in 2.0, but I don't see them making that call. I think they're going to release this product and be like, here you go.
I think worst case worst case scenario is they release the pack and they don't respond by updating the restricted list. And then you're going to have a big dilemma because some primes might allow it, some primes might not, unless there's an official statement from FFG saying it's not legal, which they're probably not even going to address for a prime.
Yeah, that is a situation that worries me, I think, is without an official announcement that you wind up with primes doing whatever they want and some using it and some not.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do. Unless they just say, hey, every card's restricted in this pack, so you get one.
Even then, it's still really good.
It's probably still going to be really good.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to pick that question one where...
Which one
to you play. Don't flip a plot next turn. That's all. You don't get a plot.
That can be pretty strong.
Yeah, so hopefully there's some more communication with that in January. I would suspect another restricted list in January. Fingers crossed. That way it would give, a good month or so before Worlds to really flush out everything and see where everyone's going to be at.
Here's the targ box. Here's half of it being restricted. You're welcome.
Yeah. Ooh, the targ box is pretty strong.
Yeah, it's definitely stronger than a Baratheon box. I don't think anything from a Baratheon box will ever get restricted.
God.
Well, yeah, totally.
There was always the power creep, Baratheon box. Everything went down low. Power creep. It's like, power creeping is supposed to keep on power creeping. It's not supposed to miss a step and go Bear down.
Box should have been released second. Really?
Oh, yeah.
that would have been great. Then they would have kicked Lannister further down the line. And then the Lanny box would have actually been good.
See? Everyone's happy.
Exactly. Okay. So maybe we're going to reverse course on our discussion order here. Because I feel like that talk about the Targ box kind of sends us into... what's doing well at the moment. And I learned something interesting in trying to prep for this week. The Annals of Castle Black, which is usually my go-to for this type of topic, is currently down. While we were recording, Alex did respond on Facebook to say he's going to check it out. So this is not an on-purpose, he shut it down sort of thing, thankfully. But it does make taking a quick look a little more tricky. So a lot of this can be pulled up on the Jousting Pavilion, but I've got to have tabs open for all the different tournaments. But I opened up everything I saw on the first page's worth of tournaments that mentioned that it was a prime. So we've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. 12 tournaments, and I take that back. I went prime or better.
I think there was a couple nationals in between.
Australian and Spanish. So I've included them in this pile. So looking at just winning deck for each of these, we've got Targ Knights of the Hollow Hill. We've got Lannister Valyrian Steel, Night's Watch Valyrian Steel, Night's Watch Kraken. Night's Watch Kraken, Tyrell, Reigns of Castamere. That, by the way, is at a four-person tournament. Wish I had been at that prime.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Night's Watch, Sea of Blood, Tyrell, Banner Dragon, Night's Watch Assault, Targ Fealty, Night's Watch, Kings of Summer, and then Greyjoy, Reigns of Castamere, which was... Bloomington, where Bob and I were over the weekend, but we'll come back to that. So it's at a quick glance here, it sounds like is Night's Watch the like most consistently winning house right now? It's got like 5 of these wins. Did I count that right?
No, I mean
6. No, 6. 6 of the wins are Night's Watch.
They printed Yorin.
That seems interesting.
And they printed Bound for the Wall. So, yeah, they're busted right now.
Even more so than Targ on the back of the Targ box. You guys think that's accurate by these results?
Well, the Targ box hasn't hit its stride yet. And I think Bob can attest to that from what his experience has been working with Team Targ and playing Targ in the last tournament, kind of what their potential is. But we've been discussing that a little bit as to kind of where they fall in the pecking order. And it's really kind of a 1A, 1B with Targ and Night's Watch, I think, right now.
You know what's interesting also, just throwing out that 1A, 1B, do we also have a 1C or does it drop to 2A for some shade of Baratheon? Because looking at these same tournaments, second place in, I'm not going to read off all of them, but second place in, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4. Second place in 4 of them was a Bera deck of some flavor, which I personally find kind of interesting.
Yeah, I think the Baratheon cohort is probably the best build. And it did win. I know CT won like his Indianapolis regional with that the week prior.
It's marked that he was playing Night's Watch Sea of Blood.
Was
Bera,
it? Okay.
Yeah, Bera cohort played by Anil was second place there. Lost to him.
Baratheon definitely has a good deck right now. I do think it's that cohort deck. I don't know if anything else that they have right now is, you know, as consistent and as good as that one.
These are all cohort, all the ones I'm looking at.
Yeah, and I that all stems from, I believe, like Hanno played that with great success. Back for, I think, you know, European or one of their nationals. So it's definitely a tier one deck. I would call it a tier one deck.
Bob, but it's extremely quick, too. I mean, it can win turn two very easily.
Yeah.
So it has that advantage as well over some of these other decks, which are kind of shifting to more of this mid-range with the Sea of Bloods and things like that. It's still a deck that can put together a win pretty quick.
Yeah, so like the way I always looked at it was like you have like top factions and you have like top decks, and the fact that Targ and Night's Watch can run just about any agenda right now, you know, puts them at that 1A, 1B. And since Baratheon really only has one probably solid deck, so a faction as a whole, it's hard to say like they're, you know, up there with the other two right now.
Okay, so you'd put them more like a 2A than like a 1C.
Yeah, I mean, they're due to just cohort alone, since it's probably one of the better decks, because I'm not really seeing shadows as much as I thought I would, which is always just interesting. And I think it's always going to have that ebb and flow of no one's going to play whatever the exposed duplicity is going to go away, and then Shadows is going to come back for a tournament or two and probably going to win, and then people are going to start packing exposed duplicity again, and then that's probably going to, you know, just wreck the Shadows decks in tournament. So that's where I'm kind of seeing that at right now. But also Valyrian Steel's just new and you draw a lot of cards, so
I think it's shiny. That new and shiny really gets a lot of attention that way.
Yeah, it's just so hard for me to construct a 75 card deck, you know, in my whatever 20 years of playing cards, It's like,
yeah,
you always played a minimum. You always played a minimum. You always played a minimum. And then I'm like, whoa, well, 75 cards? 70,
that's the minimum for that agenda. No one's asking you to play 79 or something.
Most everyone gets 60, though.
That's true. I mean, and I do have to say, the games I have played so far with Valerian Steel, they feel noticeably more, what am I looking for here? Swingy is not the word I'm looking for, but, RNGE, right? Like I hit, my league game against Zach on Monday night. Like I just didn't have a character until like turn two. Oh
yeah. Cause you have so many cards in your deck, Will.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. Like it has a very high power level, but it's also, kind of randomized there. It also does have that higher chance of screwy draws that are
well, and
not
the fact
good.
That you're probably playing a handful of just bad cards just to meet the agenda requirements. Like,
oh, I don't think any of the houses that actually want to play it have to dip into bad cards to do it.
Do you play Reckless?
There's a lot of location or attachments available. No, I do not play Reckless.
Okay. Because that's a pretty bad card. I get the fact that it's a zero cost attachment. You get a draw or get a gold.
Terminal.
But you just put a bad card inside that deck.
Yeah. I mean, if I needed a zero cost attachment, a neutral attachment, I'm way more likely to play Green Dreams for a little bit of extra filter.
That's kind of a bad card, too.
Hey, I'm not saying it's going in every deck otherwise, but I think it's far more respectable than Reckless.
Yeah, I think one of the debates will be in a few months after people realize Valerian Steel and its power level is it better for card draw or is Kohor better to get the attachment that you want? And the fact that you can play multiple attachments
in
a deck.
Kohor
is better. Is that better?
I'm leaning towards Kohor now after.
And again, I think Kohor has that higher skill level.
I agree.
That I think in like the right hands and the guy that knows, okay, I need this attachment for this play or I need this for this, compared to just being able to draw three cards a phase or a round. Yeah. So I do feel like there's a higher skill cap
on a
Kohor,
side note, though.
Well, that's true.
It is a lot of fun if somebody's playing a mill deck and you have 75 cards and you have 40 cards in your discard pile and you drop a little to Archivist and shuffle them all back in and then they quit the game. That's a lot of fun.
Ooh.
Mill deck?
Mill deck. No comment. Tyler. Nope. Nobody got two cards away from milling out a whatchamacallit trading deck. No, nobody. Well, okay, before I go down that road, I do want to say about the comparison of trading to Valerian Steel, because trading sometimes also gets played with Alliance, of course, where you're also looking at a larger deck. But it doesn't have to be. But even if it does, you are gaining consistency in the search, right? Because you can turn any random one-off attachment that you draw into the specific attachment that you need. But Valerian Steel only compounds the problem of having the randomized draw go funky in the larger deck. Since you can only play one of every attachment, then the odds of you getting the particular one that's useful in whatever situation go down. So it's kind of got like two consistency dings against it versus Kohor gaining at least one, maybe a couple. Even in the straight deck size comparison, I think it's better. And if you're playing it in a 60 card deck, that much more so, even.
Yeah, and that's where I think Targ Valerian Steel is probably always going to be the best option, just because they have that Gifts from the Widow in which they get that search type, just create whatever one of the 15 attachments that they have. So I think that's where they're always going to have that advantage in a steel deck. Again, I would lean towards Kohor, just because there's just so many attachments that you probably want to have as multiples of in a deck. So, I mean, it's kind of nice knowing if I'm playing a Valyrian steel deck, it's like, oh, they only have one Milk of the Poppy. You know, just random things like that can help out the game flow and, you know, how you're playing against that opponent. But we can talk about that in more detail, you know, in a future episode when we actually see the consistency of Valyrian steel and really get to be able to compare it to Gohor with some data.
We're still early in the regional season at the moment, really. We're what, about 2 weeks in to a regional season that runs
2 weeks
all the way through February? So
yeah, like the week before Worlds, right?
Yeah, the week before Worlds, that's when ours is.
What's a regional?
Regional.
Oh, yeah, okay. Prime championships. Yeah. I figure there's not really any real point in us changing the terminology for them for this 1 year. feel like FFG should have just called them regionals and just... Correct. Been good with it, but whatever, especially because if I understood things right, the other competitive LCG, i.e. L5R, doesn't have primes, right? They have like store championships and then like elementals and Kotes, right? And stuff, which I mean, good on them for having like flavorful names, but my point is that it's not like they were making us consistent to the other game because it doesn't have primes either, so they should have just left them regionals for the last year.
Isn't that like where like you feel like they gave us hope? Like, oh, wow, they're like really going to continue this game. They're changing the way they're doing their structures. And then it's like, yeah, this is just for like 6 months. So,
yeah. Like we just wanted you to think we were doing something. That's maybe the more awkward thing is they spent time and effort like changing this stuff and announcing that stuff for something that wasn't going to matter. So
yeah, pretty much.
Okay, sure, whatever. I'm gonna move on from that particular train of wasted time. But in the prime/regional season, from what we've seen in the last couple weeks, is there any other particular trend or interesting deck we've seen floating around that's worth talking about this early? Or do we feel like
expect to see a lot of Dothraki. And I would expect to see some Dothraki cards on a restricted list pretty soon. So
maybe. I mean, we haven't seen it go super crazy yet, though. I guess
it's going to happen.
Two targs over the weekend. Let's see. I guess top eight at Bloomington. There were
four targs.
Four targs in the top.
And I believe there was only four targ decks total. Also.
Oh,
so
really?
Of the four. I mean, yeah, I think.
Yeah, that is true.
So at the Bloomington Regional Prime, there's 20 participants. Myself and Will made the long trek from Springfield, Missouri, all the way up to Northern Illinois. So, I know there was four targets. I think most of the houses were represented. So I don't know if that was due to prize support.
Actually. I think it might have been. I mean, that definitely had a small piece in my decision-making process.
I guess we could talk about that a little bit. I played Targ Knights of Hollow Hill.
Now, let me bust in for just a sec here. Why did you play that? Just because, now, listeners, I'm going to reference last week's episode, which may or may not exist, due to some audio troubles I've discovered.
I hope it doesn't
going
exist.
To edit it. Yeah, so if it does not exist, I'm going to tell you that Aaron and Roy and Scott and I built a Targaryen Valyrian steel deck for a certain Mr. Mixie to play at Bloomington, which he did not play. So
that,
tell me
that
more about why you did not play the deck when we had this big podcast plan to build the deck. Then you would play it, then we'd be able to talk about how it went on the show. So tell me why you ruined that and let down the listeners.
So last week I had no idea what I was going to play at this tournament coming up, and so I thought, I'm like, hey, this would be a great white book episode. We've always talked about, let's build a deck, you know, on the white book. Then I'm all like, how about they build a deck, then I play it, and then I can talk about it, and bam, we just knocked out two episodes of the white book. Just
like
that.
Great idea.
And it was a great idea. So, first of all, you probably blame the Iron Throne a little bit, a smidge. Because it was, to my understanding, like...
The card or the website?
The website.
Okay. Just making sure.
I don't believe the cards were up on the Iron Throne until Thursday of last week.
That sounds right.
Oh.
Late Wednesday, early Thursday.
Yeah.
So you expected to practice with the deck?
Well, after reviewing the deck that you guys built, I noticed a lot of new cards. Like, a lot. And it was, as I just mentioned earlier, a 75-card deck, which, not a fan of. So, between the Iron Throne and the fact it was a 75-card deck, I went a different route.
Huh. Huh.
And it's not going to sound much better, because the deck I thought of, I just built the Friday night
I
before
can
the tournament.
Literally attest that this is true, because he texts me within minutes after building it, after drinking several drinks and eating an unlimited supply of boneless wings.
Yeah. I'll go ahead and do my props right now. So Applebee's had like these 25-cent boneless wings, many as you want. You could say 20, you could say 40. And they have Mucho Long Islands, $4.99 for a Mucho Long Island. So I was eating good in a neighborhood that night. And look at that. And so I thought to myself, I've never played Knights of Hollow Hill because I think it's a bad agenda. And I've said that before on the White Book. However, I thought to myself, it's not so bad if I could get all these Dothraki out and keep them out for free. I'm thinking, that'd be a good agenda then for that, because all the gold bump. And so that's the route I went. I went with a Targ, Knights of Hollow Hill, Dothraki deck.
I would like to make a point that this distinctly reminds me of another situation where Bob let the community down, where he didn't man up in shots for plots, after telling Kyle Vansel that he would. I said it there.
Ooh.
It's out there.
Oh, man.
I'm noticing a theme of letting down the community.
One, no one knows who a Kyle Vansel is, because I've not talked to that guy in like 3 months. I believe he's a white book host, right?
I mean, theoretically, he would be on tonight with us for Team Westeros, but...
Can we just move him to, like, the alumni section?
That's probably a good idea. That's probably a good idea. We'll put him there with Tommy and company.
So, in general, I would like to say thank you to, Team Essaros for putting in the time and hard work to building that deck. It's a deck I will play. Probably play this week at some point. I don't want to, let it go to waste. But yeah, it did decide on a different route, which, I mean, I did get top four with my route, so I'm not saying I would have won with Valyrian Steel, but who knows what would have happened.
But so, probably. If only you'd had a setup.
Speaking of which, didn't you lose to a Greyjoy deck? What was your experience?
I did lose to the eventual winner, Tom McKenzie, playing a Greyjoy Reigns deck, which was very similar to what was being played, I think, at Nationals. I believe, like, the Italians, like Niccolo and everyone, created that Greyjoy Reigns deck a few months ago before the restricted list. And yeah, it got good cards, and I didn't have a setup, and then I drew bad cards. So I can attest that I will not be playing Knights of Hollow Hill probably ever again in life. So
really, really, it seems like it still had a strong showing for you, though. I mean, you say it's not good. So do you think it was just a fluke that you made it? Or are you chalking it all up to your, unparalleled skill? Are you saying all the rest of us except for Tom sucked that day? Like, you got to give me a little more to go on.
So it was the first time I was playing Knights of Hollow Hill. And the gold bump was nice. However, I was kind of being consistently stuck with just that gold. Like, I wasn't drawing enough, like, of my limited locations or anything like that. So it's like I was just getting the plus three, which, I mean, that's nice. But then you're wanting to play kind of lower gold plots that kind of have a higher impact. So I had, like, quite a few three gold plots in my deck. So now I'm only getting six gold, which, you know, is enough for a body. But, like, it's not a good agenda. I mean, I just struggled with it all day, like, trying to get enough to do everything. Now, like, in my dreamland of getting Quotho and Missande and all that fun stuff and the Fury of the Kalasar to put in a Dothraki and how Khal Drogo out to discard a card to keep the Dothraki in play. It can happen. It just never happened in any of my games, so I don't know. like I would say, like, most of the games I won was just on the back of just targ good cards. Like, it really didn't matter which agenda I was using. I was just putting out good Targaryen cards. So it wasn't like, you know, saying anyone was, like, you know, being bad players or anything like that, or matchups. Like, my first matchup was against Jess Thompson, who was playing the same deck I was. She built a Targ of Hollow Hill deck, and I actually lost that game, and it was just, like, she got Marine, I didn't get Marine. And then I think she blew up my Plaza of Pride with, like, a lay waste, and it was just me kind of being from behind the whole entire game. But then I eventually beat her in a top eight. I was playing the new Iron Throne and just kept on saying Quotho during the challenge phase. So, and she had a Quotho in her hand, so she didn't get a player.
You know that turns. You can play that during any phase, right?
I mean,
no comment.
It is just an action.
I've done that multiple times where I had to put him in either in the Marshalling phase by discarding cards or even in Dom just to get him into play.
Maybe she wasn't aware of that.
The more you know.
Yeah, so the Rocky was really good. Some of their cards just seem overly busted. For example, the womb of the world, you know, and we kind of talk about how Bound for the
Hush.
Wall is.
Don't tell
busted.
Anyone about that card. Hush.
The whole look at the top five cards of an opponent's deck and, you know, get a character from it for Bound. Granted, it's only one gold, but now you get a location that you just get to do that. Yeah, that was really good.
We can't tell anyone about that card.
It seems like it could
restrict it, and then I won't play it anymore.
Oh no. I do think that one and Bound should just go see the list. So, I had fun. Pretty successful day to get top four. What did you play, Will?
I was going to say, you know what would have been even more fun?
What's that?
Playing Mill. You definitely should have played Mill.
So you can Mill in a Game of Thrones?
It is theoretically possible. Yeah.
Is that a win condition?
That is. Well, not really. It's a lose condition, I suppose. But it's a thing. It is a thing anyway. So I took Mill up to Bloomington. Had a hard time deciding on what I was going to play, but in the end, kind of figured I know there's at least three regionals that I can make it to. So I think maybe I'll play something different in each one and kind of spread out some of the prizes and stuff. So I wanted to play something Tyrell, so I settled on Tyrell Lion Mill. Partly so I could have Clever Feint as an additional way to put my shadow stuff like the Queen's Retinue back into shadow. But also partly so I could have the Red Keep for character ability cancellation. Seems like that is pretty handy if you want to make sure your mill goes off. So
That was
actually very useful. It was honestly very useful for me. The tempo hit, I feel like, wasn't too bad for me when I'm trying to get piles of gold anyway from Redwyn Straits and Gates of the Moon and that sort of thing, Arbor. Plus, in the mill deck in particular, I'm not as worried about my board state and the tempo hit of that four gold location. Because, you know, I'm just kind of trying to defend some challenges to keep you from getting unopposed and then, you know, set up a bunch of mill. The cancellation itself, I would say, was definitely handy. It was definitely worthwhile to have. I was very, very glad to have it all day for, what are they? The Maesters you just mentioned a moment ago, Tyler? Yeah, the Archivists. Definitely for Archivists, but even to a lesser extent, Begging Brothers and things like that. So I'm a fan. Or a Yoren. That would also have been handy. I didn't get to stop a Yoren, but it would have been useful against Yoren in my first round game against Tommy. So I think it has
mill anyone.
I managed to mill out one person out of my four games. So
was it a 60 card deck or 75 card deck?
That one was a 60. So well, I assume. They might have been playing a couple extras. I do not know. But their minimum deck size was 60. I think one of the biggest things I learned playing Mill over the weekend is that time really, really is your enemy more than the other player. I had three out of my four rounds go to time. The only one that didn't was my first round against Tommy, where I had a super weird fluky draw with like triplicates of like a couple unique characters right off the bat, that sort of thing, and then no income. But even then, I got Tommy down to like 15 cards and drew it out to like round four. So I still felt okay about that. And we didn't go to time. The other rounds where I was actually getting things together, time is definitely an issue. One game I did mill somebody out on that last turn. The other two, they ended, I believe one player ended with 6 cards left in deck and the other player with 2 cards left in deck, respectively.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and the person with 2 cards I would have milled out on that final turn in the standing phase if I had not screwed up a challenge earlier in the game. They were playing Night's Watch with the core wall. I had an opportunity to get an unopposed challenge through about 2 turns before that, and I totally whiffed, and I said intrigue out loud, and like right after I said it, I was like, wait a minute, that was so stupid. Power was what I meant to say, because power is the unopposed challenge, but I had already said it, so I stuck with it, and that extra 2 power, he won the game on that last turn after time was called. If he had not had that 2 power, then we would have made it to the standing phase, and I would have milled him out. So I guess my main takeaway is mill really is almost there. I think if I had a lot more reps with it, I think it, you know, really could be something. But time is your enemy, and some of that time you can't really do anything to speed up. So you need to really speed up your play, because when you've given your opponent an extra 10 cards in their hand or something, and then they go to discard for reserve, a lot of time gets eaten up with them deciding what to keep and what to discard. And there's just nothing you personally can do to speed that up. So, ouch.
So will Mill win a prime this season?
Ooh. Will it win a prime? You know what? I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that, yes, it will win a prime somewhere. But I'm going to say it's going to be in Europe, not the U.S.
No U.S.
Yeah.
And I'm still waiting for the white book to win a prime. So anyone out there rocking that agenda, hit me up if you win. Anyone out there?
There's going to be some.
Still got that floating some contest.
Crime in Texas with 3 people, and someone's going to run it and win.
Oh, I believe there's rules.
Yeah, about, what was it? It had to be at least 10 players?
Is that I believe it was at least 20. So
20,
but
okay.
I'm happy to lower that, you know, per month.
Well, you may have to. It does look like, at least for these first few primes, that attendance does appear to have trended down. But I thought 20 is honestly a good number, and it does seem like a couple regionals had that. Bloomington did, Indy did, but some of these others, like I mentioned, that New Hampshire one had 4 people.
Yeah, that's
Colorado
rough.
Colorado had 5 or 6. And I don't know. I can't help but wonder if it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, yes, numbers do tend to drift downward over the years in these games. But also, like, how much more down did they go after the announcement of the end of OP and a lot of people kind of making the decision to look elsewhere for their competitive fix. I don't know for sure.
And I kind of feel like you're going to have people like yourself who knows that, you know, this is going to be like some of the last few events I have a chance to go to. So we even made that drive, which was, what, 6 hours? Was that 5 hours?
Yeah, it's like 5.5. Yeah.
But like, if the game was still going on and strong, do you think you would have made that just for a prime? You know,
for a prime. Otherwise,
yeah. So I think that's where you have like the people that are like, you know what? There's like only a few more months left of organized play, official organized play. I want to hit as many tournaments as I can. I love this game. Or you have the guys that are all like, yeah, I'm just going to go play a different card game and not worry about traveling, you know, 4 hours to go play a game that, you know, is not supported anymore. Mm-hmm. So I think that's where you're going to have, like, events that are 5 people and events that might be, like, you know, 25 people. Just kind of matter of the area and location that you're at.
Sure enough, I guess we'll see how more of the season goes. Well, props and slops?
Yeah. I mean, I think everyone's going to prop Disney, right?
Yeah. You guys both have Disney Prime?
I have it. I have not used it yet.
Okay. So as much as I desperately want to drop a spoiler bomb on Talking Mandalorian... You're telling me I shouldn't.
Oh, I don't mind spoilers at all. I usually read stuff
prior to watching it. Spoil anything.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess I won't.
They're
spoil
doing
anything.
What? 2 episodes a week, right?
1 a week. It's every Friday. They just launched the service with episode 1 already up, so there wound up being 2 last week because of that. Yeah, there's 2 out right now, and then, 2 days from when we're recording, the next one will drop?
Yeah.
So
I could watch 3 episodes this weekend.
Yeah, exactly.
Be all caught up. Gotcha.
Get a whole, like, movie's worth, basically.
Look at that.
Of, like, time, that is. So.
I'll give props to Chris Schoenthal and his... Prime win at Paradise. He's a great guy, does a lot for the community, and glad to see that he was able to take something down.
For sure. And they had a good crew over there. Forgetting how many they had, but it was a good turnout. Oh man, gosh! Other than Disney, I guess maybe I'm going to go ahead and throw props out to Lost Order, new Star Wars video game. Broke down and
haven't heard of that.
Yeah, I picked it up. It just dropped, I think on the 15th, maybe. So like just the end of last week. It is, since you've not heard of it, I'll give you the brief rundown. It is set shortly after the end of episode 3, so like at the tail end of the Jedi Purge, basically, and you play yet another temporarily surviving Jedi that's been discovered, named Cal Kestis, who basically gets recruited by some other folks to attempt to put the Jedi Order back together. And of course, I think we all know how that is going to end, but the ride to get there is the trick. And so far it's good. I mean, it is a gorgeous game. It is definitely gorgeous. It borrows a lot from a style of game that I'm not really a fan of, the whole like Bloodborne, Dark Souls type of action, like punishment type game. So frankly, I played for a while on the default difficulty and then just decided, like, you know what? Like, that's not really for me. I'm turning it down to the story mode difficulty because, like, I just want to run around and be a Jedi and enjoy, like, this story. So that's what I did. And it's pretty fun that way. So, yeah. But you got anything else? Or did we already knock out the whole thing?
I don't have anything else.
I haven't been doing a whole lot other than taking care of babies and kids.
Should you prop them or slop them? I
will absolutely prop my wonderful wife and children, who I love dearly.
Good thing.
Who's staring
right next to you
across the room.
Yeah, and you definitely don't want that permanently out on the internet that you gave them slops. Definitely not. So now you permanently have props out there.
Right. This will go down in history forever.
Yeah. Yeah. Your children can look back at this episode, be like, oh man, Dad really did love us. Really, if
you think about it, I should get props for myself for being such an amazing husband and father to say that about my family.
You know, I think that's true. I think that is
probably works that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. We should effectively like build you a little digital monument.
I don't know why not.
Well, somebody get on that. No, nobody's jumping on that.
Give them time.
Not, well,
they're too busy hanging out in the danger zone.
Oh, there it is.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah. This definitely closes this chapter with white.